This is the ANC Report with Ryan Dawson. My guest today is Colleen Harding. She is the host of Project Socrates on Freedomizer Radio Network. We just had on Kurt Haskell from Freedomizer, also the lawyer who witnessed the underwear bombing shenanigans. So another one from Freedomizer. She interviews experts in their collective fields of medicine, law, and other disciplines. Colleen is a key part of the team of muckraking journalists and medical researchers who broke the CDC whistleblower scandal, in which a top-ranking CDC scientist, Dr. William Thompson, admitted to being part of a scientific fraud in order to change statistical outcomes in vaccine science. Now, her show airs on Saturdays on freedomizerradio.com at 4 p.m. Pacific. How are you doing, Colleen?
Hi, Ryan. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I appreciate being on your show as well on 9/11 last year.
Well, I think I'd like to do a lot more collaborations. I really have been following your work for years. I consider you a dear friend, and that you have a lot of interesting projects pending that I think your audience is very clear on, but I want to make sure my audience is aware of what you're doing. So in the future, hopefully, you and I can do some things for Project Socrates to spread the word about the 28 pages that your projects that you're doing. That's
well,
so exciting.
Absolutely. Well, it doubled up now because we're lobbying for the 28 pages to get read and declassified, and it happened to coincidentally correlate with the anti-APAC rally in Washington, D.C. That's with Aaron Mapp and Grant Smith, and so you're going to have Scott Horton, Justin Raimondo, Jeff Blankert. All the big hitters are going to be there, and I'm going to be there too. We're going to document the whole thing. So it's like we killed two birds with one stone, and I honestly didn't plan it out like that, but it's great. I knew it was near then, but I wasn't sure. So.
Exciting stuff. So we'll be watching that, and you and I will talk privately. We'll get you on the show. We'll get as many people interested in this topic. And man, it's good to be alive. These are exciting times, trying times, but exciting times. So
well, you and I have talked before about fear porn in medicine as well. I think the last time was with the Ebola scare. I was in L.A., the only time I've ever been in L.A., by the way. But when I was there, the first thing I saw on my phone when I went and bought one was a warning about Ebola, because one guy in Texas had Ebola. And, of course, Jonestown and, you know, Melonhead and stuff was telling everybody it was going to be an epidemic, and they were all lying that it was really going to be airborne. And, of course, I did my little video saying you're not going to die of Ebola. We agreed on that point, and guess who was right?
We were right once again. And what's going on with the measles situation is, you know, to compare and contrast it with Ebola, Ebola is a serious condition, whereas measles is, you know, let me pull up this stat that I pulled up this morning to tell you is, okay, so the death rate from measles in 1920, way before the vaccine came out, okay, let's see, there were 469,000 cases reported. About 7,500 patients died. That's a death rate of 1.6 pre-vaccine. Okay.
That's in the U.S.
What was that?
Was that, that's in the United States?
In the United States, okay. In 1920, decades before the vaccine came out. And the death rate for measles in 1955, just maybe a decade before the measles came out, was 3 in 10 million people would die annually from measles. So 3 in 10 million prior to the vaccine. So that just gives you a scope of the nature of this condition, okay? And first, let me also say this is not medical advice. This is not legal advice. Please consult your attorney. Please consult your doctor.
Even if you don't die, it's a pain in the ass. I mean, you get a fever and you have red spots and, you know. But there's no reason to think you're going to die.
Right. It's not really with Ebola. I did have some concerns because of the nature of that disease, but, you know, I knew it wasn't going to go airborne. I knew it wasn't going to, you know, be the plague that took the entire planet and killed us 90% like some certain radio show hosts, indicated. But, you know,
go live in a bunker in New Zealand. I love the term go airborne as if that's how stuff evolves. It just suddenly goes airborne. They actually were warning people, saying, well, when winter comes, it's going to go airborne, which is the opposite of contagious. But measles is very contagious, but not very deadly. Ebola is very deadly, but it's not contagious at all. With a bleed on you or something, I guess. But the fear porn is selling. I'm not in the U.S., so I don't get to see what's on TV. Could you bring me up to speed and other non-U.S. citizens?
Or anyone smart enough to not plug into that modality of entertainment, which is a lot of us statistically, interestingly enough. Our generation is kind of turning away from the TV. But, you know, I'm not a TV watcher, but I can't pick up a newspaper. I can't pick up a magazine. I can't walk past the TV in a store without seeing this nonstop, relentless push about measles. And it turned interesting in the past 24 or 48 hours because now it's turned into a political issue, which indicates to me, I'm going to go ahead and theorize again. I'm going to say this is theory. I'm postulating, speculating here, but the fact that the politicians are now getting involved in such a non-issue tells me that I think the end goal here is that they're looking to eliminate legal exemptions, which in the United States, about 1.7% of us use. So what's the big interest in, you know, such a tiny demographic that, you know, I represent of 1.7 out of, you know, 302 million people in the United States. So, you know, and you know what, folks listening in the audience, you know, you have a political audience. I have a medical audience. We're different. Okay. So whether you're pro-vaccine, anti-vaccine, somewhere in the middle, or don't even care. Okay. So just suspend that a moment and let's talk about what this means. Can I ask you a question, Ryan?
Sure.
Would you sign a contract if you don't know what it says, what the agreement is, and what the terms are? Would you do that?
Of course not.
Absolutely not. Any person with any kind of brain would say no, okay? And obviously there wouldn't be any incentive to sign a contract if the terms of that contract were completely in flux, that nothing, no part of it was nailed down, right? So there'd be no reason to enter a contractual agreement if the terms are nebulous, okay?
Right.
That's my concern with this vaccine issue, okay? Because is it in our best interest to empower the state to the degree that they can force you to undergo a procedure or take a medication that does carry a risk of injury or death? In the United States, we do have the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Fund, which pays damages to people who are harmed inevitably by vaccines using our tax dollars, which I'm uncomfortable with. I don't want to pay damages for Merck's products. There's not another product out there that the taxpayer is 100% responsible for a private industry's damages. This makes me uncomfortable, and I think this is something that your audience can understand.
Well,
even
a lot
if they
of money too. I mean, healthcare costs enough without more mandatory shots for things that aren't that deadly. I mean, you ought to have a choice in the matter, I think. I'm not anti-vaccine. I take it on a case-by-case basis. I know that in Japan, you're required to take a lot fewer vaccines than in the U.S., and yet they're not all dropping dead or turning into zombies or anything. They actually have a longer lifespan, longer life expectancy, and so on, and fewer vaccines. And the only difference really is who owns the patents on what all shots, and it's really an economic thing more than anything else. But they use the theme of health, which is such a scary thing, to kind of browbeat and frighten people into just taking them all, because they don't really understand any of them, so they just take anything they're told, flu shot, whatever, just take it, and most of them aren't really necessary.
Well, I'm glad you said that, and I'm glad you again brought it home to your point. The term you coined is fear porn, and again, it's always so incredibly relevant to everything that we see, whether it be in medicine, law, politics, etc. Now, all the shots in the United States, the CDC recommends a vaccine schedule for our children, okay? And unless you're using an exemption, this is what you got to do. And not every vaccine on that list is created equal, in my opinion. And yes, you should, as a consumer, make an informed decision there. Because, for example, within about an hour of my son being born, they said, okay, it's time for his hepatitis B vaccine. And I said, whoa, wait, back up a minute. Let's talk about hepatitis B. And they were like, what? I said, yes. Okay, that is more or less a bloodborne STD, okay? The people in the risk group for that are IV drug users, prostitutes, mothers who are prostitutes, which I'm not, thank you very much. So yeah, my son is only an hour old. He's definitely not an IV drug user yet. At least if you could give him like a decade to catch up, that'd be great. So he's
not.
But
they're trying to make him one in a way.
So I said he's not a homosexual man. He's not in any of these risk groups at all. So I'm going to go ahead and decline that vaccine. And they were floored. They were shocked. They didn't know what to do with me. They just kind of walked away. But that is one of the vaccines on the CDC's recommended
vaccine. See, you had ammo. You could say this is an STD, da 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 da. Another mom that doesn't have that information could get browbeat into, what, do you want your kid to get sick? You want to risk it? Why, you're a horrible mom? And just sort of pressure them into it.
Yes. Again, here we go with the fear again, leveraging the fear and then also leveraging, you know, the authority of being a physician. You know, that's a 1-2 punch that will knock, you know, most families right out. And especially
these are the same people that'll chop off a piece of a little boy's penis just over superstitious mumbo jumbo. They're health professionals and they went through school and they became doctors and nurses, whatever. And they're still like, you want me to cut a piece of his dick off? And, I mean, that blows my mind, you know?
I'd love to talk about that issue at length. I know years ago, you made that video, which, you know, you were the first libertarian I knew of to make a video like that. Addressing the issue of circumcision and the ownership of one's body and how circumcision, you know, is a cosmetic procedure. You know, most people in the world are not circumcised and they're not, you know, dropping like flies, you know.
Yeah, they have a higher rate of urinary tract infection and the stuff they say. I live in a country where I don't think anybody hardly circumcised.
Nope. In Japan, they do not. Right. And you guys have your thongs rotting off, do you?
I mean, It's also, it robs the male, I'm gonna get back into measles, but I mean, it's supposedly the foreskin, some of the most, later in life, pleasurable area there. And, they're chopping it off. And it's just, it seems like if you want to do that, you can decide that when you're older, but to do it to a baby, to chop off a piece of their body under, you know, they know that it's not for health reasons. It might be for aesthetic reasons or whatever, but the fact that they offer that or pressure that still, 2015, kind of blows my mind, and it just shows you about the medical industry at a whole, because that procedure does cost money. So they're like, oh, you want me to chop this off because we get to charge you for it.
Here in the United States, many insurances are not covering it, especially Medicaid. So if a family does want this, they're paying straight out of pocket for it. And because it's kind of been the status quo and no one's really comfortable questioning it because it has to do with our bodies and we have these weird residual Victorian beliefs about our bodies, if people are continuing to do this procedure in the United States even though they have no medical or religious reason, because this is primarily a religious
it's of religious origins, but you're right, nowadays it's sort of, well, I want to look like all the other kids or something. I don't know. As little boys come around looking at each other's dicks, they do not. But, you know, it's like...
Right. I've trained my son to say, you know, if in the locker room or at the urinal, if somebody gives him crap, I'm teaching him to say, like, why is it exactly that you're looking at my junk? That you feel comfortable to weigh in about another man's junk? Maybe that's something you need to examine latently inside yourself. And I think that would probably shut down most bullies and embarrass them.
I don't think it would happen. I mean, like, I played football and stuff, and there were a few kids who were uncircumcised. No one cared. You know, like, it's of the least interest, trust me.
I'm not male. I can't pretend I know everything about male culture, but from what I observe on the outside, I really don't think that, you know, men spend a lot of time,
you
know,
fully about neutral. It's like, as soon as you look, I mean, you avoid it as much as you can, unless you're gay, I guess.
But that's not
nobody wants to see that. Even women don't really think a flaccid penis is attractive. I think.
No.
I mean, it's just an ugly looking thing, unless it's erect, I guess, for some. But getting way off course here, so.
How do we end up here?
But that's fear porn too. I mean, they tell people you gotta sniff it, or you know, you have a higher risk of urinary tract infections and other problems.
Well, HIV. You know what? How about using condoms if you're going to have relations and not relying on your skin to protect you from an STD? Is that really a smart thing to do?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go ahead and shift back to Measles. Okay, so
I saw a cute video you had up with measles in cartoons and commercials and things, and this is the same thing. You could go back to the bird flu from the 70s and those commercials, and that, and it's the same stuff, but like the Flintstones and some other things, and they're just like, oh no, I got the measles. It's like a big joke. The Brady Bunch was another one. And nothing of it. I mean, it's like, oh man, one of the Bradys has it. Now the rest of them are going to catch it. Ha ha. Not worried at all, you know?
No, they weren't worried at all. The mother Brady had a chart, and she had each kid listed, and she had each disease, mumps, measles, chicken pox, etc. And she was, you know, nobody was panicking. No one was terrified. She recognized that one of the children had the measles, so she's checking off the chart. It wasn't, you know, a complete hysteria like we're seeing right now in the States that, you know, people
Mama
are
Brady was
absolutely panicking.
Too, but she had a mullet.
Oh, she had a really sweet mullet.
She did. She was rocking the thin mullet.
Okay, so going back to the question I asked at the top of the show, would you sign a contract if you don't know what it says? And why would you sign a contract if the terms are completely in flux? Well, there are at least 220 new vaccines in the developmental pipeline for children and adults right now.
220?
Yes. And this is interesting because, you know, there's really no end in sight to the vaccine development in that area. And the reason for that is, from a business standpoint, vaccines are a boon. Vaccines are a litigation-free product. government the government via taxes subsidizes the research for vaccines. So it's a sweet gravy train. Why wouldn't you develop product in this area from a business standpoint? Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
I hear you.
Now, okay, for the audience who doesn't care about vaccines, just forget for a minute anything about the current vaccine schedule that we've mentioned earlier. Doesn't matter if you like it or not. The fact is that it is always changing, okay? And today we administer about 12 times more vaccines than they did in 1940, okay? So we have every reason to believe, especially, you know, now that I just told you, I'm aware of 220 new vaccines in the pipeline for children and adults. So we know that the CDC's vaccine schedule is going to continue to change and grow, okay? So going back to the question at the top of the show, we can't agree to the terms, you know, we cannot say for sure that we want to eliminate vaccine choice because this area is going to change so much. You know, we can't be certain that we're going to be 100% comfortable with the vaccines that are added to the mandated list in the future. And if you did say that you were comfortable with it, then that would mean you're either not expecting to be a parent or a grandparent, or you don't have young kids, or maybe they're grown and out of the house, or, you know, or you're completely lying to yourself, because no critical thinker, no honest person could ever sign off on a sight unseen vaccine schedule of the future. And yet that's exactly what's happening. That's exactly what people are doing when they can condemn people like me who are fighting for your right to refuse. Currently, you do have the right to refuse should you choose to use it. And because of the people like me, the quote anti-vaccine people, they have been demonizing all along. This is precisely what we're fighting for. And it harkens back in my mind. It reminds me of how, you know, the hippies were treated, the anti-war hippies were treated. They were, you know, said, oh, well, don't you love the troops? You know, you obviously hate the troops, but that was the primary motivation for the anti-war hippie, amongst other things, was why am I sending my classmates overseas to fight and die, you know? So it I think there's some parallels there because, you know,
because the helicopters and heroin need money too.
Of course. But the first thing that people say, you know, to me, or at least behind my back, is, well, you know, what are you, a baby killer? Do you want babies to die from measles? No, I don't. And guess what? We know, and I'll get you some links. It's absolutely a fact that if in the third world, and especially in the first world here, if you raise vitamin A levels, then it cuts the mortality rate for measles dramatically. And mostly why people are dying in the third world from measles is a few things. When you actually dig into those numbers, you find out that they were dehydrated and they maybe don't have the best clean water sources over there. So they're dehydrated from the measles, and the fatality ended up happening due to the unclean water, not necessarily the measles. Had they had clean water and proper nutrition, they could have endured this disease, which can maybe last 3 to 9 days tops.
I'm willing to bet that far more children die from U.S. foreign policy and the IMF than from any of these diseases.
You know what? We should crunch those numbers. That would be actually really interesting to do as a meme, and I guarantee you, you're right.
Well, I mean, that drought in Ethiopia and the Horn of Africa just worse than 60 years when the IMF and USAID killed probably 4 or 5 million in just a couple of years, a couple million in the Congo, a million in Iraq. I mean, if you want to add foreign policy to it too, but I don't know anything wiping that many people out. Even the regular flu doesn't kill that many elderly people.
And what's scary about the vaccines is that, again, you know, we have at least 220 new in R&D and research and development, and vaccine manufacturers see an untapped market in adult vaccines, and they're coming for us next, okay? And what are we going to do when, you know, the state or your employer or your insurance company forces you to get a vaccine that you simply don't want, that you're not comfortable with? You know, I mentioned earlier about the hepatitis B vaccine. Once you know what that is, you know, it's hard to comply with it because I'm not in that risk group. My son's not in that risk group. So, you know, what are we going to do when we can't decline? And if it hasn't.
And what happens to the price of anything when they know you have to have it?
It's going to go through the roof. And again,
I mean,
these are subsidized.
If you make something mandatory, it will go as high as the market will bear.
And that, you know, from, you know, a political, legal perspective, if these vaccines are subsidized by the state, then, you know, that's our tax dollars being spent on these products, which may or may not be necessary, going back to the hepatitis B vaccine example. So the frightening thing here is really the state. You know, do we want to empower the state to the degree that they can force us to take a medication or undergo a procedure? That's what this is all about. So whether you're, you know, pro-vaccine, anti-vaccine, somewhere in the middle, or just trying to make informed decisions for you and your family, that's the question you need to ask yourself right now.
Well, there's a lot of dogmatism I see on all sides there. Some people are just like, just take your fucking vaccine, just you're fucking out of your mind, don't even want to hear anything about possibly a profit motive and giving you unnecessary vaccines, for example, like I brought up. And someone else just doesn't want to think anything. And then they'll get labeled as anti-science and blah, blah, blah. Even though, look, to each one, case by case, I'll give you my reason, you know? I did the same thing for any drugs, like recreational drugs. I'm not a fan. I don't care if someone else uses them, but I'm pro-choice in the matter. And when you make anything in the market mandatory, it becomes very, very expensive. And a lot of these things are unnecessary. And if all you have to do is look around and see that outside of the United States, most other countries don't require even a third as many shots and vaccinations as the United States. So right. Either that disease, you know, stays within borders, and I can't get a Canadian sick. Sorry, there's a border there. Kind of like the germ sitting there and waiting 5 seconds before they jump on your food. I don't think so. And so something's going on. You know, we just have a higher standard, but you have a shorter life expectancy. I mean, any measuring stick you want to use, the U.S. is behind many of those nations that don't have as many vaccinations and mandatory shots. So I honestly think it's for profit motive. That's just my opinion. But I know I've never had a flu shot in my life. And just go, and people say it doesn't get you sick. But my grandmother and all her friends swear that yes, it does. The ones who took it did get sick. It's not supposed to get you sick, but they're not supposed to kill you either, but there are a number, it's in the low hundreds, but who die from vaccinations too. Probably more died from measles vaccination than actual measles nowadays. But
well, also that we don't have a clear picture of exactly the nature of vaccine injury in the United States, because even the CDC acknowledges that VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Reporting Instrument, is insufficient. So we know, based on, you know, their own writings, that there's probably at least 10 times more vaccine injuries out there than we're aware of. because they're not being reported in a timely fashion. If they are reported, doctors aren't trained to understand if this is a vaccine injury or not. In fact, their medical education says look for any other reason. It can't possibly be the vaccine. We have some issues with the vaccine reporting instrument here in the United States. So we don't actually completely know the nature and scope of vaccine injury, even by their own admission.
The numbers are fudged in everything in the U.S. I mean, from the national debt, the health, whatever, they play with it. But I know adults in Japan who've tried to immigrate or did immigrate to the United States, and one of the things they have to go do is they have to go to the hospital and get a whole new list of shots as an adult. They have to get vaccinated for a bunch of things they obviously weren't going to get. They've lived their whole life without it. But when they go to America, they need it. It is a requirement. Even though they don't have outbreaks of any of these diseases in Japan, and they don't have the vaccines for them either, it's still a requirement in the U.S. And so that, to me, sold me on it. So, okay, these must be pushed. And when they started pushing the H1N1 and things, I guess, 2 years ago, whatever, and it's packaged. I mean, it's got commercials. It had fear. You had the, you know, doomsday radio host pushing all this crap. And it's constant. And it, measles, you said, is political. And you were talking about Rand Paul earlier. I wanted to ask you about what he was doing too. But Ebola was like that too. Right after the Senate election was over, not a peep about Ebola. You're not going to hear about it again. But let me ask you about Rand Paul, who is not Ron Paul, just because his last name is Paul. look how different George Bush and George Bush Jr. were. Although there's even greater distance between the Pauls, but he was he against it, now for it, or?
Regarding Rand Paul, I think most of what he does is extremely calculating, and I think that he's attempting to play the game, and it looks like he has a lot of his father's ideology, but he's slimy enough to play the game. And a chief example of this is he was doing an interview, I believe, with CBS, and he brought up the vaccines. He said, you know, that people should be allowed to make choices about this. And, you know, he said that vaccines can cause mental disorders, which that wasn't, you know, an appropriate medical way to say it. He is a physician. I was kind of embarrassed about that. But the fact is
In the past, they used to have mercury. So
he's not wrong, but
our government's guilty of giving black people syphilis on purpose and watching them die. Speaking.
So he did this interview, and, you know, he, you know, spoke out about the vaccines, endorsed parental choice, and, you know, I guess that got him mixed reviews because, you know, there's not the overwhelming majority of people, particularly right now, are very pro-vaccine. So then yesterday in the afternoon, apparently he went out and got his MMR booster and then did a stage photo op and a full-page article in the New York Times talking about how he got his MMR booster shot.
He's pro-choice and he chose to get a shot, so nothing hypocritical there, but definitely very timely political-like.
Exactly. The thing this man does is calculate.
I'm getting my shot on camera.
Yeah, so it was calculated. I found it disingenuous, but he is playing the game. Then yesterday we had Hillary Clinton weigh in on it, and she said, you know, this silly statement that, in fact, let me pull it up while we're talking, but Hillary Clinton came out, all the GOP.
I can tell you right now, I'm against whatever she said.
What was that?
I can tell you without even hearing it, whatever Hillary said, I'm against it. Probably.
Oh, yeah, and without a doubt. And it's
our government was guilty in the 80s. Watch, I was alive in the 80s, tail end of the 70s and 80s, of sterilizing Native Americans without them knowing. They were going after women, sterilizing, you know, unwanted races. This is not ancient history. This is, that could have been my mom. You know, that they were sterilizing, I would have never been born, or any of my brothers. Like, they were sterilizing Indian women because they could. Without their knowledge. And they also had a scandal in the, where they were stealing, well, not stealing, but telling white people that their baby died when it didn't, and then selling it to like rich people for adoption. Ric Flair was one of his children, the wrestler.
And really?
He discovered it, and it's in his book. It's fascinating. He wrote a book, and it's not about wrestling. I mean, it's about his life, so there's wrestling in it. But from his birth, it was very interesting because he's a Carolina kid now, but his adopted parents are from Ohio, and his real mother was told that he died. And they took this blonde, blue-eyed baby, future Ric Flair, and put him with this very wealthy family. And it, just check out his book. I mean, Ric Flair is... That's his name. Woo! You just gotta say that when you say his name. It's fascinating, and it's funny that one of those babies became such a famous person and wrote about it, and gives more weight to it. It's Ric Flair. I mean, he's well known. He's got risk. You know, he's not gonna make anything up like that. He was part of that. He was one of those babies, and I don't remember the numbers. It's in his book, but it was a lot of children who were stolen from their families and given to other families. So. That was happening to white families, and American Indians were being sterilized. And like I said before, blacks are being given diseases on purpose. And I don't trust government, and I don't want mandatory anything from them within their needles. I mean, and I'm not completely against vaccines or anything. I just think you need to do the research and decide whether it's necessary or not.
And right. It's about individual choice. It's about informed consent, Ryan.
Exactly.
It's about each person being empowered to understand the data, to make the best decision you can, not just blindly accepting, you know, procedures or medications just because someone said so. That doesn't even sound like a good idea. So I think everyone in your audience can appreciate that fact. And going back to what you were saying about, you know, what happened to Native Americans, you know, what happened with Tuskegee. The CDC whistleblower situation is interesting because Dr. William Thompson, senior scientist at the CDC, is now on record saying, yes, I was part of scientific fraud. And what they did was they literally arbitrarily began to eliminate data from a study in violation of the study protocols. And what that did was that completely changed the outcome because they noticed instantaneously when they looked at this data that they called it the race effect, that African-American male children vaccinated on time using the recommended CDC vaccine schedule had a higher incident of disease by 340%. So they, you know, they wanted to make the statistical outcome disappear. And the way they did this was they started to eliminate data arbitrarily. And that's not how science works. When a study begins, it's called laying out your protocol.
Why did they want that variable to disappear rather than investigating why it was the case?
Well, that's my whole point. And that is not science. That is silence. And that is violence. And that's why I'm in this game. Because you can't say that I'm anti-science, but the CDC itself is cooking books. Please.
When they said the Earth was going to freeze in the 70s. Or
right.
Back when they told us smoking was good for you.
Oh, good old tobacco science. Yeah, and I think there's a lot of parallels.
Spontaneous combustion in humans.
Right?
I was taught that in like fourth grade. And now even at 9 or however old you are in fourth grade.
Really?
No, there's no spontaneous combustion. It was based on like a couple cases where some people
burned smoking in bed, right?
Yeah, they basically set their clothes on fire and whatever it is.
But going back a second, I finally pulled up that Hillary quote. She tweeted yesterday, "The science is clear. The earth is round, the sky is blue, and vaccines work. Let's protect all our kids. Hashtag grandmothers know best."
See, and that's the kind of arrogance that people throw at you. They say, all the other scientific things we definitely know, like the Earth is round, must back up my specific claim on a current issue on medicine or whatever. And as if to oppose me is just to be anti-science. And just pretending like politics and money and economics don't affect science. Time and time and time again, it's proven that, yes, it does. Anything can pollute. It can be polluted by politics and economics. In Japan, right. They said they didn't allow birth control until 1999. Now, the rest of the world, because Japan needs more babies,
right.
Most of the rest of the world has had birth control the pill I'm talking about, since about the 50s, and then quite prominent in the 60s, without the women exploding and whatever, you know. There are some problems and not, but the pill does prevent you from getting pregnant, and it doesn't, it's not going to destroy you or anything. It's quite liberating. It actually indirectly led to help aid women's suffrage, blah, blah, blah. In Japan, 1999, and if you want to get it now, they'll still browbeat you into all these risks and things, ignoring all the tens of millions of American women from teenage on who use it, because it's not in the state's interest to have birth control. They want more children to pay the pension funds of all these aging Japanese Obahans and old ladies. And so that's what the state says. You're like, look, they're trying to deny something simultaneously with the rest of the world being on another path right in front of their face. And that's what I see the U.S. doing with vaccines. They're telling people to take all these huge numbers of vaccines when most of the countries around in first world high technology don't require the same thing. And so you can see the lies within your own state. And it's not about the science of it. It's the interpretation of the science. It's the application of the science. Governments lie. Economics, always check the economics and who benefits. You hear stuff all the time that's supposedly backed by science that's been polluted by greedy economics.
Precisely. And, you know, we're coming down to the end of the time frame that we have together, but, you know, I want people to be aware of these issues, and, you know, especially since it's a nonstop fear porn parade here in the States, and it's going to intensify. I predict, I could be wrong here, but it looks like they're coming for the exemption rights of people like me, and they're not going to stop until they achieve these ends. And I also theorize that given the fact that Dr. William Thompson, the CDC whistleblower, has recently been granted legal whistleblower status as of Monday, I cannot reveal my sources on that, and I cannot completely 100% confirm that either. But given that new information, I think that they knew that the jig is up. I think that they knew that that situation is blowing up and going to intensify, and I think they know that we're coming for them to expose all this fraud and to enable parents to have a true informed consent. So I think that they're pushing to close the gap now to eliminate exemption law, because once it's done, it's going to be hard to undo. If they remove the exemptions, to reverse that is going to be difficult. So I think we're going to see an increased push in these areas. We're going to have even more politicians coming out of the woodwork and weighing in on it, and we're going to probably see some legislation introduced very quickly here. That's my opinion. Now, as libertarians, I think the free market solution here, the ethical thing to do, is to allow people the right to refuse and leave it up to doctors and big pharma to indicate to us what we should be doing with our own bodies and for our own families. And maybe it's important for doctors and big pharma to do a better job of convincing and proving to parents the efficacy and safety of vaccines. And we definitely need to attempt to reverse the law that grants vaccine managers total immunity from vaccine injury lawsuits. I think that's part of the free market solution here.
I'd add that you should have the choice of whether or not you want to buy health insurance. When you force people to buy health insurance and yet won't lift the restrictions on, you know, on competition, then they just end up having to buy something they can't afford, which is detrimental too in another way.
And I think that there is a relationship here between Obamacare and the mandatory vaccines. Again, this is just, you know, I'm just prognosticating just the way like a sportscaster.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think definitely that's correct.
I'm not, you know, claiming to predict the future here, but a sports broadcaster would go, well, this is the play I think they're attempting to run. So this is, again, what I think is in store for us.
Well, I'm batting 1,000, so I'm just going to go with that.
You really are. You're like a psychic over here. You should open like Miss Cleo's psychic line. Like, you really do have a batting record.
It matches the economic. Always follow the money. I mean, if you want to be right, you know. Look at where the coins are. That's how it goes. I wish I was wrong, because I usually have to, what I say is so gloomy and terrible, but that's usually the case, is the problem.
Right.
I also think it's an issue that's not us giving money to Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and they'd rather talk about anything than that.
Yeah.
Well, we hit the time frame. All right, well, I hope to be back on your show soon. I'll keep you updated on Washington and everything, and I thank you for all your time. You know these health issues more than me and spit out these statistics. I got my mind around enough stuff with the foreign policy and the politics and economics and everything, and I do want to do more shows on health, so I hope I can help you.
Well, this is why we're good teammates. This is why we work well together, because what you do, you're the only one in our industry who does it the way you do it, in the detail level that you do it with the politics. And, you know, regarding vaccines, you know, I'd like to think that my information is complementary and equally as detailed, but we are representing different spheres. So I think, yes, our teamwork is very complementary to each other, and it works well. So, yes, let's have you on Project Socrates ASAP. I know you have a lot of stuff pending that we have to tell people about. So I appreciate you letting me come on today. Again, folks, my website, freedomizerradio.com. In the States, it airs on Saturdays, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. It is available on the playback. I'll be archiving more. I'm not doing a good job of archiving, but whatever. We'll work that out. And again, that's Project Socrates on Freedomizer Radio. Thanks again, Ryan.
Yeah, there's a couple of mine on there, too, if you search my name with Project Socrates. So get the 9/11 one. That was one of the best. I think it was the best. It wasn't one of. It was the best 9/11 interview I had done. And it was on 9/11. And so I was glad I got to talk, and we squeezed a lot of information in that hour. So,
and it led to some really great things. You know, yeah. We then leveraged that into eventually getting you to Eddie Bravo.
Yeah, which was awesome for a couple reasons. For the exposure and the politics, and also just because as a martial artist, it was really very interesting and fun to meet him.
And eventually we're going to get you on Joe Rogan. That's going to happen. So there's amazing things in the future. But these are trying times for everyone out here. But you know what? There's a lot of reasons to look forward to the future. So again, thanks for having me, Ryan.
Yeah, keep on kicking it. All right, thanks very much. That was Colleen Harding, everybody. Freedomizer Radio. Go check her out. Peace.